Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Welcome, friends. It's me, Dee Trussell, and this is the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. And what a great episode we have for you today. One of my favorite YouTube channels out there is Project Unity. It's my go-to source for esoteric, fascinating, weird information. And the host of Project Unity is the guest today, Jay Anderson. If you are looking to dip your finger in some weird waters, if you feel a little claustrophobic hanging out in default reality, a little smothered by the priest class of hypermaterialism that wants to make you think you live in a world where there's no magic, then this episode is the antidote. And so is Jay's incredible YouTube channel and his Twitter or X. All the links you need to find Jay are down below. But first, everybody, please welcome back the DTFH, Jay Anderson. I've been following the work you've been doing in Egypt and investigating anomalous sites. It's something I've always been interested in. But I'm curious, when you started doing that, when your interest in that started, and most importantly, what's the weirdest thing that happened to you out there?
I mean, I've had some pretty weird experiences in my life, bro. But being out in Egypt, I've been out there a couple of times now. The first time I went out was actually just after COVID, and I was out there with one of the Grand Masters of the Knights Templar and a bunch of other esoterically inclined researchers. Wow. And experiencers of the anomalous. So I was with a very interesting group of people, and we went to some incredible places that first time. That first time going to Egypt and going through these temple sites and actually experiencing it firsthand is always mind-blowing and just awe-inspiring. But the time that I went recently, I've only just got back from Egypt, I feel like I had a new set of eyes. When I was first going, it was an incredible experience, but I hadn't really started to hone in on the research that I've been doing for the past few years, which is starting to show me that there's a global pattern in the ancient past that seems to signify that the same civilization, the same culture, the same group was actually building a lot of these places globally, right, all across the world. And Egypt is one of these, what I would call like an apex example of this, where you've got incredible architecture that's very contradictory to what we assign to the ancient Egyptians, and we assign to this time period with the toolkit that we believe they had, incredibly advanced stone cutting, incredibly heavy multi-ton bricks and blocks being used. It's something to behold when you go through something like the pyramids on the Great Plateau, the Giza Plateau, like the Great Pyramid of Giza and the Khafre Pyramid and Menkaure. When you're going inside these things, one of the things that I bring up so much, and it feels like it's worn out, like people just use this as a kind of point to make so much that's been driven home to the point where I think people just don't really think it's a big deal, but it certainly is a big deal. If you look at Egypt, you go to like the Valley of the Kings or the Valley of the Queens, all these different areas where the royalty were buried, you know, and you've got these tombs. It's absolutely adorned in gold and calligraphy and hieroglyphs and motifs and symbols and veneration to the gods and to the pharaohs. And you step into the pyramids, which are supposed to be the pinnacle of this hieroglyph using, very artistically driven, very visually, symbolically using culture. And they're completely devoid of any hieroglyphics. There's none inside the pyramids. You can search yourself and you won't find one. And this is like one of the things that I guess is worn out because a lot of people know this. Oh yeah, there's no hieroglyphs, but that's a serious question mark. And going out to places like the Giza Plateau with like a 4K camera and being able to go through these sites in a way that not a lot of people get to do was a real privilege, because it's a place that not everyone can get out to, and I wanted to try and bring the closest thing possible to that, which is like a really high quality, you know, journey and expedition through the plateau, through Saqqara. We went to the Saqqara site, all, you know, the pyramid complex out there. And I was very lucky because I was there with a fantastic researcher called Jeffrey Drum, who's an American guy, but he's been living out in Cairo now for, I think, about 3 years. He just up and moved out there, decided he wanted to settle down in Cairo and start researching 24/7. And he has a hypothesis, a theory about the pyramid complexes and the sites that involve mass creation of chemicals, like industrial level chemical manufacturing. And there's a lot of interesting evidence for that. And I don't know if you know this, but Egypt was originally called Kemet, K-H-E-M-E-T. And that's where we get chemistry and alchemy from. Wow. These are the derivatives. So it is a very interesting kind of nexus point for science and alchemy and chemistry. So we were highlighting that in the last trip on my series.
You know, not to make it too broad, but one, I think, inarguable observation you can make when it comes to ancient Egypt is that one of the qualities of living in the present moment, of modernity, as we call it, is we like to think that we are the pinnacle. We like to imagine that the world as it is the best it's ever been. Because I think it's a little depressing to contemplate, you know, maybe what they say about the Kali Yuga is true. Maybe, in fact, just because you've got air conditioning, just because you have the internet, just because you have airplanes or skyscrapers is not indicative of a healthy, advanced civilization, but could actually be more of a symptomatic of a degraded civilization. But to pull off the notion of for the pyramids to seem mysterious, first you have to assign to ancient people a primitive quality. They could never do what we do. It's impossible. Yeah. And then it's mysterious. But if you look at what's happening right now, not as the pinnacle of civilization, but as a sort of like entropic process that leads to technology to take the place of things that maybe you should be able to do without the technology, then the pyramids make a lot more sense.
Yeah, and exactly, Duncan. And I think it speaks to just multivariate routes of evolution and development. You can develop through, you know, territory and conflict and competition, which is what we seem to have done. And it will produce incredible things, but it will also produce nuclear weapons and weaponized AI. And, you know, this is the realm of development that we've chosen. But something that fascinates me is the fact that the further we go back in time, the more advanced things seem to become. For example, this idea we have of the Neolithic age or the Stone Age of primal man, the hunter-gatherer. This was supposed to be a time before the wheel, before agriculture, before writing and mathematics, before any signature of complex societal dynamics was supposed to exist. But it's during this period that we have the Stone Age, that we find sites like Stonehenge in England or Newgrange in Ireland or Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, of course, which is the oldest megalithic complex in the world in Turkey. You know, these places and countless more all across the world, from Egypt to Peru to England and America. What you see is precision engineering, the lifting and placing of multi-ton stones, the precision cutting of these stones before even the creation of copper and bronze tools. You see precise alignments to astronomical phases, to the solstices, the equinox, to planetary alignments. We see a demonstration of even acoustic engineering in many of these Stone Age megalithic sites. So we see the use of acoustic wavelengths being kind of bolstered through limestone, and we can get into that in terms of the materials that are being used in some of these sites. We see this strangely complementary stone material on an energetic level. And by that, I mean that many of these geometrically constructed, astronomically aligned, acoustically resonant megalithic sites from the Stone Age use materials that can actually create energetic or electrical properties. And so what we see at that time, before civilization was supposed to exist, is a complex engineering, physics, astronomical, and acoustic package of scientific knowledge, all wrapped up in the form of these towering multi-ton structures that, according to mainstream archaeologists, were the work of uneducated hunter-gatherers in animal hide tents with no culture and no advanced scientific knowledge. But that makes no sense when you juxtapose what we're being taught about the Stone Age against the actual megalithic evidence left behind from the Stone Age. It contradicts the entire model.
Obviously what you're talking about is instantaneously dismissed by experts. Immediately, you are a kook if you say anything other than, yeah, there are these grunting cave-dwelling dipshits who are like, oh, let's build the most beautiful thing anyone will see in humanity for thousands of years to come. They stopped, you know, spearing fucking bison for a second and threw up a structure that has lasted from some unknown point in history to now that we still marvel at. But somehow you can't say that.
You know what I think the issue is? It's hyper specialization. Mm. So archaeology, of course, is a very important field, but hyper special, and we saw this with things like COVID as well. Like any time where an expert is so focused on their field of research, and perhaps elements within that field of research now necessitate multivariate disciplines and, you know, the introduction of other opinions from, you know, when we're talking about archaeology and architecture, the opinions of mechanics and engineers and, you know, people who work with stone and actually craft and machine. And that's why you have people like a very famous machinist and engineer called Christopher Dunn, who went out to Egypt and went to a lot of these places and looked at the granite sarcophagi and just went, well, the machine tolerances on this are on par with aerospace level capabilities today. Wow. And the drill holes, the striation marks inside these drill holes, would necessitate a feed rate of the teeth that is just impossible for ancient Egypt, and yet here it is. And the thing is, if you're an archaeologist and you've gone through that, you know, refined academic channel of status quo model and teaching and repeating the same thing that their forebearers have been speaking about for years and years, and this model is kind of concretized and solidified into an immovable object, if you try and introduce anything into that that's novel, yeah, it gets rejected outright. We see that across the scientific domain where, you know, models have become too inherently kind of crystallized into a status quo that is no longer representative of the information we're seeing. And, you know, case in point is Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, the ancient megalithic site. It's like just over 11,000 years old, and we were supposed to believe prior to Göbekli Tepe that nothing advanced was going on 3,500, 4,000 years ago. And then an 11,000 year old site pops up in the middle of Turkey where they'd originally just attributed this entire region to hunter-gatherers, and then lo and behold, here this, you know, Göbekli Tepe arises. So yeah, it's a very frustrating thing, but I think that the alternative media, the alternative history space, people like Graham Hancock and Randall Carlson, you know, there are catalysts now that are trying to overturn this status quo that's become too rigid. And I think that we actually have a lot more of an advantage because the popular media is rising up in comparison to the mainstream. And that's happening across the board from politics to history,
Well, yes. And that's interesting to me. The across the board happening. The way, if you look at it holistically, on the global level, you do see this pushback against the hyper-specialized, quote, experts, and an increased demand for at least acknowledgement of some of these anomalous phenomena that are happening. Because simultaneous to Graham Hancock and Carlson and you and all these people who are like, you know, showing like inarguable bits of data. I mean, you could add to it all the woo stuff you want, but like the machinist just mentioned, what are you going to argue with a fucking machinist? And like, so,
but they will, they will literally argue with a machinist when they've never done any studying in machine work. And, you know, that's the thing. Well, that's the crazy thing
because,
about
you know, I mean, I get not to like derail the entire conversation, but I think also you could say this is just what happens when capitalism infiltrates the universities, you know, because these people need funding. I get it.
Funding incentives. Absolutely.
Nobody's going to give you whatever funding you want if you're doing...
I think there's a Stargate underneath the pyramids.
Like, get the fuck out of my office. You're not getting any research money, you fucking hippie. This isn't Ancient Aliens. And so, but also, you know, we've seen the very same thing happening in the UAP phenomena. Which is although it's like different, you still have people whose lives have been destroyed, not because they were kooks, but because they had an experience and they were honest about it, and then their careers get ruined because of that. And so, why do you have any sense of why there appears to be, and I'm not saying a conspiracy, but more of a kind of emergent phenomena that as one of its qualities wants to suppress this kind of information from general gen pop?
Well, I mean, you know, the conversations around, for example, UFOs or deep ancient history invoking cataclysm and reset, you know, it's all very existential stuff, right? And I think it just goes against the blueprint that we've created as a neat little species, you know, with our theologies and our little institutions and our little map, our roadmap of how things are supposed to be explained. But just like any revolutionary moment in history, the disruption causes anxiety and fear and rejection and some violence and some upheaval, but it might catalyze into a positive evolution for the species in the long run. The same can be said for our personal lives, right? In terms of like, you know, the things that we go through as individuals. And I think that can be extrapolated out to the collective, and we can look at the collective as one individual human being. And I think we're still quite infantile. I think we reject things that are beyond the veil of our ability to fully articulate and quantify. And, you know, I mean, I've had experiences, entire impetus behind creating my YouTube channel and actually beginning being a researcher and a public voice was the fact that I had experiences with orbs, a part of the UFO category. You know, I had experiences with orbs that were very visceral, very real. And, you know, these are things that if I explain it to someone, if I don't do it the right way, they'll just sign me off as someone who's insane. Well,
why don't
crazy
we talk about
and, you know,
that? For people who might have missed the previous episode we did, just to catch everybody up, talk about that experience.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I had a few different experiences, and I stand by this, and it's something that I feel very strongly in terms of trying to get people to recognize a symbiosis between what we call spiritual and what we call scientific, because there is this gray area where things intersect, and especially when you get into the quantum physics and the quantum biophysics of how our body interacts on a very fundamental energetic level with the environment. And this is something that's bleeding edge science. This is only just coming into the forefront. I've interviewed some very interesting people on the subject of quantum biology and looking at the human being on a very micro subcellular level and seeing that there are elements to our body that interact with quantum fields. Now, the reason why I premise it with that is because I was out in my garden projecting thoughts that were laced with the intention of having some form of contact event. And this is not something that is a normal thing to do, and I recognize that and I understand that, but it was a strange synchronistic journey that led me to the belief that this was something I should be doing. And it kind of came off of the back of me asking the universe for a sign, and then my best friend was like, dude, you got to check out this documentary. It's called Unacknowledged by this guy called Dr. Stephen Greer. And I'd never heard of Dr. Greer or the UFO subject properly at this point, and just watched this documentary. And it was near the end of that documentary, which is a very good documentary, by the way, for anyone who hasn't watched it. Fantastic, you know, lots of whistleblowers and high-level spooks and national security guys talking about their experiences and elements of the cover-up and the national security architecture cover-up. But near the end of that documentary, which is something that Stephen Greer pushes very strongly and has been like a kind of keystone of his whole journey as a UFO researcher, and he gets a lot of heat for it, is the concept of using your own consciousness as a communicatory method with whatever these phenomena are. And he you know, phrased it in a way that really resonated. And because a week previously I'd been kind of sitting on my bed asking for essentially something real that was representative of all the things I'd been researching for a few years, because I got to a very depressed point where I just felt like all of this existential philosophical bullshit isn't actually helping me in my life at all. I know a lot of weird things, but none of this is actually dealing with my life. And I remember in a moment of frustration just sitting on my bed and being like, if this is important information for me to be knowing, and this is actually what I'm supposed to be understanding about reality, give me something real that I can do, that I can see, that I can experience, that proves that all of this stuff about consciousness and universal mind, all of this is real. And so a week later, my best friend, Dr. Greer, documentary, watch the documentary, he introduces this concept of using the mind as a communicatory method. Now, if that worked, that would surely validate these beliefs I was starting to incorporate into my worldview about consciousness and how it interacts with the universe. So I went out into my back garden with that knowledge that I had been asking for something on my bed that week previously as a kind of catalyst for feeling that this was a synchronicity. I need to, like, you know, actually engage with this. And so I started, I'd say about 2018. I started going out into my back garden at night and just getting into it. I'm not a meditative practitioner, certainly not at that point either. I just understood that, you know, you have to breathe through your nose and out through your mouth and calm your brain down and get your thoughts under control and start to just, like, you know, practice that silence and get into that state of silence. And so I was doing that. And then from that state of silence, I'd start to really bring my emotions up in a positive way, my energy. I would try and focus on loving thoughts and positive, grateful thoughts about life. And with all of that energy, which again, people be rolling their eyes, but we can get into the biophysics of what this all is in terms of emotion. Emotion is energy in motion, right? So what you're seeing when you're, like, you know, creating these thought processes and I guess visual archetypes is you're actually, in my opinion, activating a very biochemical, bioenergetic process in the body. And you feel it. You feel that I'm sure you do, because you do a lot of meditation. The tingling, you start to feel the sensations of a form of a come up in some sense from this experience. And so at that point, I would start to just push out these thoughts. Like, you know, imagine that I was pushing out these thoughts. I want to see something. If you think the same things that I believe about the universe, about consciousness, about love, about reality, if you're, you know, here to try and help us understand, I want to see you. I was really trying to operate from the highest level I could, because, you know, these are weird things that you're doing, and I didn't want to try and bring in any sort of dark or even neutral energy. So I was trying to bring my emotions up in a very loving state. the first things that started happening were flashes in the light in the night sky. I've now learned that this is called flash bulbs in the contact communities that operate all over the world. And again, these are things that will be dismissed because there are satellites that will flash from catching the sun. It's called an iridium flare. But you do have to go out at very specific times to actually catch
I've
these things doing
their transition.
I've never
seen a fucking iridium goddamn flare. And if I did, right. I'd talk about it. I don't care if it's off a satellite. In fact, if I even heard this term iridium flare, that's all I would be saying and will be saying for the next couple of weeks. I'm going to use that word so many times in the next week. So yeah, sure, it could be an iridium fucking flare. Never seen one. And the idea of an iridium flare happening while meditating to contact the, you know, that is, but you know what? You don't have to say the eye roll thing anymore. And you don't have to say, because you know what? We know for sure that there is a group of people desperately clinging to default reality, like people holding on to a wooden boat in a raging river that is just falling apart right in front of them. Let them cling, let them roll their fucking eyes, because I think we're almost post that now. And yeah, great. Quantum physics and physicists and quantum computing has finally caught up with what people have been saying in the esoteric realm for thousands of years. And that's fantastic if that helps people let go of that old, cracked, shitty, hyper-specialized, boring ass, life-defeating, anti-nature, anti-universe, anti-soul raft that they want us all to cling on to. But I don't think you have to acknowledge them anymore. Let them roll their fucking eyes for until the Atlas comet comes and turns us all into peaches or whatever it's going to do. Forgive my rant.
I like that, bro. I know, and I agree. I agree. There is a genuine sense that we're on the other side of this conversation now in terms of credibility and trying to prove it. But I had these experiences of seeing flash bulbs, and this was something that was happening. You know, you'd see five or six flashes within the space of 2 minutes from different parts of the sky, a bright white flash in a void of space. You send another thought, and then suddenly another flash in a void of space. And this was like the light, subtle events. That's what I would consider to be subtle based on what happened later on. But it was almost like a introductory, initiatory, step-by-step guide towards introducing you to interfacing with something beyond your real understanding. So let's start him off with a few flashes of light, couple flashes of light in the sky. Okay, that's got his curiosity peaked. Will he continue on? Will he keep trying to actually interface with us? And I did. I kept trying to do this work. It was in 2019 in August that I had extremely profound experiences involving orange orbs of light, undeniable experiences. And on one of these occasions, I can talk about them all, but on one of these occasions, three of them flew across. I was in my back garden again, same place, flew across the sky. I saw in my peripheral this flash of orange. I looked up and these three orange balls of light flew across the sky and froze on a dime right above my house, high up in the sky. And I was staring up at these three balls of light. And then I noticed that they were starting to move around each other in this kind of very strange rotational sort of movement. And they were beginning to descend. And I was frozen in place. I wasn't really scared, but I was awestricken. I was just kind of in awe and couldn't really articulate anything in my mind. I was just staring. And again, this is something that people always like to say is like, oh my God, why didn't you film it, bro? And it's like, when you're seeing something in your sober waking life that is absolutely a glitch in the matrix to what you're supposed to be experiencing based on every bit of cultural and social programming that you've experienced throughout your school and parenthood, like all of this is building up, and then suddenly something just goes vroom, and you do not for 1 minute think about, oh, let me just tear my eyes.
These are the same assholes who film concerts. These are the same assholes who film fireworks. Go fuck yourself.
No.
Throw your phone up. It's an angel. Oh, throw your fucking phone up. Oh, you fucking pieces of shit.
I couldn't give a single shit about everyone else at that point.
It's a little disrespectful.
I was absorbing everything for myself. Exactly right. Oh, yeah, sorry. Let me just look at this through a 1080p lens.
Holy shit, I'm
going
to get a lot of views for this. Hey, Angel, can you hold on a second? I think I'm going to get it.
Right?
This is going to blow up my feed.
Yeah. Fucking selfie. Yeah, so dumb, but like that's the thing, right? People will say that shit, but yeah, I was stuck in place, frozen in place, looking at these three orbs. They came down like rotating around each other in this weird kind of smooth pattern, and then they got, I would say, about 5 feet, 3-5 feet above the roof of my house, and they just froze, and they froze in place,
and that's where I
they were
shit
roughly
my pants.
Dude, I was frozen. I was just staring. I don't know what I could do other than stare and just keep absorbing this event that was occurring to me.
Did you hear anything?
No sound.
Eerie.
And they were like completely silent, basketball size, like roughly basketball sized, slightly transparent. They were like a light orange color. They were slightly transparent and they almost didn't look spherical. They almost looked circular, like two dimensional, almost like the way that I've described them before. If you know the camera effect called bokeh, where you outfocus and you just get balls of light, like they do it on highways and stuff, where it's just completely focused out and all the headlights just become little circles moving around on the screen. They kind of looked like that, like these orange circles, ghostly looking circles that came down and froze above the roof of my house. And they stayed there for a few seconds and then they started this rotation again and they moved up and they went over to my neighbor's garden. And they froze over my neighbor's garden for a few seconds, and then they began their rotational movement again, and they decided to ascend and went up and up. And it was only when they started leaving that my brain kicked into gear, and I started trying to send thoughts again, like, come back. And they were just like, nah, we're done with you now, bro. But, you know, that was it. Like, I had these incredible experiences with orange orbs. I had four separate experiences pretty much within the space of a month. And at that point, I decided to get a camera and go out into the middle of the woods, away from my neighbors, away from people, put it on a tree branch and just be like, hey, world, my name's Jay and this happened to me and this is what I think it represents. And fast forward and I'm, you know, sitting down with government spooks and spies and interviewing these people on things. And it's been a very wild journey, but it all started with incredibly anomalous experiences that I do think can be explained through science, but we're only just, like you said, getting to the point where the mysticism is being empirically evidenced by the science. But the mysticism got there first because intuition drills right through the material realm down into the Akashic field and it gets information and it brings it back up, but it brings it back up absent the empirical data. So all of the materialists, they scoff, they go, this can't be real. 100 years later, 200 years later, it gets proven. And we're in a time right now with, you know, quantum computation and AI kind of bootstrapping our ability to research. I think it is a rapid revelatory time, which is why, like we were saying before, Duncan, so many edifices of the status quo, pick your discipline, pick whether it's political or historical or technological or national security, they're all collapsing and kind of, you know, they're under immense stress to change and transform.
Yeah, when you're about to wake up, you're in some kind of dream. It seemed very real. And then as you're coming out of the dream, you might begin to realize like that this isn't quite as real as I thought. And then you just wake up, you never think about it again. That could be happening on a global scale. And the quality of that would be that all of these pillars of the status quo are just collapsing right in front of us. Whether it's, you know, the idea of political decorum, you know, like you've got you've got world leaders who are like, you know, if any of the things that they are saying publicly now, if 20 years ago, if you said that, you were gone with the wind, man.
Right.
You had to have this sort of very serious way of being. Now there's fist fights in parliament. There, everything. Did you ever see the original Dawn of the Dead?
No, I didn't actually.
I'm an old man. It's my favorite zombie movie, and I like it because of the beginning. And the beginning is some people hold up during the first moment of a zombie apocalypse watching the news. And the news, the reporter is desperately trying to keep things normal, even though zombies are eating people all over the world. And people are saying, you have to shoot them in the head. You have to, this is, and he's like, calm down, calm down. And this is what's so funny to me right now about what's happening is what I consider the priest class of this ideology-based modern religion that doesn't have some new, like a mystical being at its nucleus, but a bundle of ideas about how the universe operates, what history is, how people are supposed to treat one another, and what we should prioritize as important in a human life. This priest class doesn't pass a bowl around to get money. The priest class is funded by big pharma, political systems, and the priest class is like experiencing the same sort of moment that I imagine priest class experienced when Nietzsche started saying, right. God is dead. We don't have to fucking listen to your ass anymore. And they're having the same reaction, and I think for a lot of people, that's unnerving. And I don't mean to seem callous about how that must feel. We've all invested a lot of our life energy, a lot of our identity into whatever you want to call the zeitgeist as it was. And it's a poignant thing to watch it go bye-bye and to watch little bits and to watch it. It's very similar to watching someone die. People don't die all at once. They, you know what I mean? They kind of fall asleep and wake up. They're in and they're out. And that's what we're seeing, this whole collapse. And which is why, strangely enough, you are, I think it was the last episode, my friend Daniel Noah, who runs a wonderful production company called Spectre Vision. They've made a lot of great movies. Guess what he was talking about? Orbs.
What's up?
He was talking about going out and calling the orbs and how he can do this too. And are we all just figuring?
I think everyone can do it. I can pretty much.
But I will tell you this: I don't know if I told this to you in the last time we talked, and I've mentioned it a couple of times on the podcast. But here I'm a massive hypocrite because I feel embarrassed telling this story. For the very same reason that you, I think, have to say, okay, you're going to roll your eyes. But when I was a kid, well, not a kid, in high school, woke up, went to the window, and right there in the window were those, was exactly what you're describing. Beautiful orbs, circular motion. It seemed more like geometric. It was rotating in front of my window. It was beautiful, frozen. I didn't know how to react to it. And then I just woke up in the morning, and I wrote that off as a dream. I don't think that was a dream. I think for whatever reason, because I was fucking around with the Robert Monroe stuff, they just were like, who's this asshole? Let's look in his window. And I don't know what they are. Do you have any theory on what these things are? Are they us? Is it us like opening our eyes to like the sort of greater self? Like right now we're sort of like looking through the keyhole of humanness, human identity, but we exist on so many different planes of reality. When you open yourself up a little bit, it would be easy to think that's not me, but really you're just seeing some sort of, I don't know, just another appendage of the human self or something.
I think that would be in a way the Jungian kind of perception of what you could be interacting with here, kind of like an overmind, an overarching conscious membrane that can be interacted with by each individual and provide some form of stimulus for conscious development, evolutionary development. I thought about that. You know, the Buddhists might say it's a tulpa, it's a psychic projection. Ignore it. It's basically noise. You're trying to get beyond those shapes and beyond those orbs and down into the darkness and the silence and the void and, you know, the kind of eternal hum of the creator, right? And that's kind of a distraction. Or it's alien probes that can bend space-time and interact with conscious quantum perturbations that kind of pop up, and they can find the signal and, you know, locate the strong point where someone is blinking a little brighter in the cosmos with their mind. I don't know, man. That's the thing, right? Is we only have questions. And when I came into this and I started interviewing people and I started, you know, getting connections, making affiliations with people in the intelligence community and interviewing the spies and the CIA guys. And you think you're going to find answers. You think you might get a little bit closer to putting the puzzle piece together. And quite frankly, I have nothing but more questions, maybe slightly better articulated questions, more researched questions, but no answers, man. That's why I think it's such a an anathema to the status quo to talk about these things, because it is so unarticulatable. It cannot be quantified. You know, Terence McKenna spoke about the UFO beautifully in so many different lectures about this kind of this shadow that's haunting humanity, and it can never be fully grasped, but it's realized in the individual who experiences it. And in some ways it pushes us forward by providing a glimpse of the impossible that we're always trying to get towards, right? Like a carrot on the cosmic stick, right? And so, you know, the UFO, the orbs, is it my higher self? Is it simply a mechanism built into a conscious universe? When an element of that conscious universe begins to hit a threshold, a critical point, and then, you know, a catalyst is released to produce the next step for it to come up to. Like I said, it was very strange how it was almost a step-by-step process. The light flashes, the little things going on in the sky. After a couple of months, suddenly I'm getting the orbs happening. And it just made me wonder if maybe this was a progressional type of thing of building you up to the ability to maybe even have an actual conversation or communication with whatever these things are. And I should have kept with it, but honestly, dude, like I ended up getting so deep into the research, and I ended up having, you know, and I think at that point as well, I was younger, I was more naive, I was more, I would say, easily manipulatable by people within the intelligence community, which I now look back on with, you know, kind of a completely different set of eyes in terms of how they were interacting with me. Because what's weird about the UFO subject particularly, I would say, and I'm sure this happens in a lot of like conspiracy subjects, once you start becoming a public person, you get some interviews, you're starting to get into, like, you know, even just a few thousand range of people are watching you, people are talking, these guys come out of the woodwork. They start getting introduced to you, you start getting, and they want you to feel very special, like you're really kicking the doors down, like you're really focusing in on something. Let me tell you about what I experienced in, you know, Dulles and the missile range, and you just look back on it. And I think what happened with me is a lot of these people were warning me against doing this type of stuff, you know, warning me against interacting, because one individual who was claiming to be a National Air and Space Intelligence Center guy, an NSA spook, and I had him as a source for a couple of years. And even Ross Coulthart, who's quite well known in the UFO subject, me and him were both chewing over this guy and who he really was, because he had a very interesting knowledge base. But he said to me, "You're basically just broadcasting on all wavelengths and hoping whatever swims up to you is friendly." And that never left me. It never left me. I was always worried about it. He put a kernel of doubt into my mind, and I stopped doing the contact attempts as much. And I stopped doing it.
Can I just point something out? It's really funny.
Yeah, sorry. I have a tendency to ramble.
No.
And talk,
I do
bro.
Too. And I love your rambling, but the absolute irony in a spook coming to you because of the energy you sent out, telling you should be careful when you send out that energy because nefarious things could approach you. What I mean? Which is exactly what fucking happened. You sent out the juju and look what came back. Some spook all of a sudden is like, "Hey, you know, you should be careful. Things can come out of the ether." But I think where it does get really curious is, and if we go back to my priest class idea and we sort of look at this default reality, being a spell, if you want to call it that, a paradigm that is takes a lot of energy to keep it going. a lot of energy to keep this thing up, the bubble or whatever you want to call it. There's a lot of energy to keep that bubble from popping because huge parts of that bubble are ridiculous. And so the moment something from outside the bubble, which I would say these things are, they're outside the bubble. You know, somebody was telling me this story of their, oh God, forgive me. Everyone, please don't immediately stop listening when I say this. Somebody was telling me about their ayahuasca experience. And, you know, most ayahuasca experiences, I'm like, oh, I don't know, man. I feel the same way when you tell me about a dream you had or something. No offense, ayahuasca people. But this person, I'm not going to say their name because they didn't say I could, was like, you know, with like, not some kind of like Pasadena, California shaman. They were like with a Terrence McKenna shaman, the real fucking thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying that as many people on whatever the particular form of DMT are using, they're all sharing the experience. Like everyone's seeing the same fucking thing. The shaman's beating this drum and all of a sudden they could see a dome around them, some kind of dome, a sphere. And then the shaman breaks that apart. And so that sphere, whatever that may be, that for us is upheld by every fucking commercial you watch, every car commercial that you see, every news broadcast you see making you afraid of some group of people or this group of people or that group of people or the government or the it's held together by people very invested in humans believing that's all there is. And these orbs, they come in, they pierce that for a second. And then, of course, the next thing that you might expect to happen is higher levels of whatever this weird religion is that we're all participating in show up. And they're like, hey, listen, you know, yeah, it's true. I'm going to tell you it's true. What you saw, it's real. But maybe don't, because danger. When the reality is, what are you doing? When you tell a story like you told, when Daniel Noah tells the story he told, and no one really stands to benefit from telling these stories. You can go ahead and say, oh yeah, right, there's money to be made. I'm so sorry. If there was money to be made in talking about UFOs and Bigfoot and all the stuff we love to talk about, you and I would have better podcasting equipment. I'd be doing this shit for my private plane.
You guys don't want to know what these little screens are hiding. Like, you know what
no
I mean?
No offense,
like,
Josh. I love the studio here. But you and me, we'd be in some kind of like vault right now. No. So of course, when you start signal boosting to the world that there are things outside of the transient, materialistic, secularist bubble.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Apartment People, Champion, the trusted name in Columbus Living, brings you the District of Berkshire.
Man, it will be fun to live there, right by Tanger Outlet Malls. Oh my God, great location too, getting to and from Columbus, and a great deal right now.
Free rent until next year. Free rent until next year.
He ain't lying. Move in now, you don't pay rent until next year.
The District at Berkshire, available now at livewithchampion.com. That's livewithchampion.com.
there are a kind of immune response happens, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And in that immune response, people will come and tell you, no, you're going down the wrong path. And that to me is the sign you're going down the right path. That's a good sign. These are the bridge trolls, I guess, if you're looking at the archetype. It's the bridge troll.
I mean, I everything that followed on from those experiences in terms of where it took me in my life has been a positive thing.
Yeah.
You know, connecting with all these incredible people, being able to travel to amazing places, have these experiences, grow as a man. Like, this is all things that are positive to me. And I haven't found, like, there's a lot of people in the UFO community. There's a lot of spiritual and very theologically driven elements of the UFO community, a lot of Christianity being represented in there. And there's a lot of, inference of this being demonic. This is all demonic. You're interfacing with demons. Yeah. You're messing with demons. You're being manipulated by evil forces. And I just, if that's the case, then they've manipulated me into a positive mindset and, interacting with people in a way that I find is beneficial. And I don't really see any evil coming from me. And nobody's told me that I'm evil. So I just think that there's a lot that people knee-jerk react to because, again, it's a very worn-out trope, but just fear of the unknown. It's very true. We fear the unknown. And so these things represent such strong elements of the unknown. You know, a big package of information is available to you if you do your research that can disturb you in terms of, like, what is potentially happening to some people in the world, abductions and, these interfaces with other beings that seem quite terrifying. So there's a lot of information out there to put people off of any sort of attempt at, interfacing with intelligences beyond the veil of our own understanding of what intelligence constitutes. But I think that that's also a bit of a weak argument because we have to extend out into these areas as humans. I think that's what humans do. We drive forward with ingenuity. Yeah. We drive forward by looking at the next thing to try and achieve, the next thing to discover. And when I discovered that orbs could come and interact with me when I'm thinking thoughts, it led me down a cascade of research that, ended in biophysics and quantum non-locality and consciousness and the things that we're just on the edge of actually scientifically, empirically evidencing. And to invoke Terence McKenna again, this is the archaic revival. It's the revival of this ancient mystery knowledge through the lens of Western science.
Yeah. Well, I think if you start from the base level to try to unravel some of this stuff, one thing for sure, one problem humanity shares, it's not just war, famine, old age, disease, and death. One problem we all share is we are stuck in a fucking gravity well, my friends. Like, we are shipwrecked beyond shipwrecked. Every single one of us, our asses are being stuck to our seats right now because we're on a massive planet that's pushing into time space, producing gravity. What that means, there's nowhere else you can go. You're not getting out of here, man. Not yet. And so if you look at that, so there's a sort of stuck situation happening here. Like, from the moment you're born, you're stuck on one planet. You look up, infinity. You're not going there. You're stuck on this fucking planet. Now, talk about things you don't want to think about. It's a little claustrophobic when you realize you're on this planet that seems to be populated by an uncomfortable amount of lunatics, like people who have been driven completely mad by the situation of being in infinity, unable to get into the cosmos other than with telescopes and the amount of energy it takes to get, just think of James Webb to get that thing up there, how long it takes to get a probe to a planet. This is a really annoying situation. It's a little bit probably like being a baby bird in a nest, right? You have some sense that there's something outside of this fucking nest. Like, I might be able to fly or something. I don't know. My mom can. I've heard it's possible. I see it out there. But the difference is none of us have done it yet. And I remember the first time I couldn't believe it when someone said this to me because I was so excited hearing about how Elon Musk wanted to get up to Mars. And I'm like, man, that is cool. Are we going to have a finally, like some of us living on another planet and what that means for humanity. They're like, really? So that's what you're going to do? Just leave the planet, fuck it up, and then go to some other planet? Why don't we fix this one first? And to me, though that person's intentions were good, it represents someone following whatever this weird religion is. Because it's like, are you serious? Like, because the planet is having ecological problems, we should just table the possibility that there might be a way to spread out into the stars? Like, seriously? And these things that you're talking about, they tell us, come, this could be, you can do this. We did it. We're out there. We're outside of the bubble, outside of the gravity well, outside of this, this little tiny planet with a swarm of space junk around it, fixated on itself, mostly looking down to track, monitor, tag, to send fear signals via the internet back down on itself to reflect and magnify the horrors of our world, and not looking out with this beautiful, beautiful universe. And so to me, that's part of this, the pickle that we're in. And when anytime I've gotten the contact from these things, it always is reassuring, I guess you could say. It's always saying, don't worry. Don't worry. This is just part of the process. This is part of growing up. This is part of getting out of the nest. This is what always happens.
And I think if you are one of those people that is able to have an experience like that, with something that pierces that veil in that way, it's as tantalizing as it is frustrating, because that frustration of, I can't be there with you doing that thing you're doing. I'm seeing you escape all, like you said, restrictions and boundaries and chains of any planetary gravitational hold that we are subjected to. And we have to just watch and witness and kind of stare in wonderment and wonder what this could possibly mean when you see something fly across the sky at such incredible speeds and do right angle turns and vanish in the blip of an eye. But I also would say that there is a significant amount of the UFO subject that is a purposeful psychological operation to skew the perceptions of human technology. I think that we've developed incredibly advanced energy and propulsion systems in highly funded classified projects, kind of breaking out from the government to kind of like a quasi-government private aerospace world of, you know, dare I say, breakaway civilization, but more like a rogue group of assets that have previous ties to government and have a lot of funding and have access to technology that we would believe to be alien if we saw it operating in the sky. And I think it's a very convenient smokescreen, because what you've seen over the years, like especially if you go back to like the 1950s when UFO conferences were first starting because of Roswell and things like this, the cultural appetite for UFOs in the 1950s was very high, and this is when the conference circuit really began, and it's propagated on from there. And a lot of intelligence assets, you know, involved in these conferences, providing opinions, putting narratives into the UFO lore, the things that have now built up to become UFO lore, is mainly, I would say, intelligence community obfuscation and smokescreens, because it's extremely useful to have a population on the fringe who believe in aliens and a general population who think aliens are ridiculous, because then when the fringe people see the black triangle flying over the sky, they'll say it's alien and they'll go to the masses and the masses will laugh at them, when in reality that could be Lockheed Martin, that could be Raytheon, that could be Boeing, that could be one of the many top tier aerospace companies that have advanced capabilities. And so, like, you know, it's a spaghetti junction when it comes to the UFO subject. It's a spaghetti junction of narratives and a lot of intelligence involvement, because there's a reality. There is something important and very real, but it's very difficult to pinpoint that down to a real thread of truth.
Well, let me put a bow around it. Because again, you can sort of, what are the characteristics? What are the qualities of the, I guess you could say, the power class and its messaging and on the UAP phenomena. And I think one through line is it seems to need people to believe it's in control. So that's one through line. Now, the way you execute that through line is by saying, number one, well, we have all this data that we know. Do we have the data or is there data? And maybe we do and maybe we don't. Maybe it's us and maybe it's not. But really what's happening is you're giving the illusion that you're involved. And because if you want to maintain power, you need people to think, you know, and this you for sure, and you've got it, or you're making it, or, and you might be a little bit, but of course we always have high tech shit that people don't know about. I don't doubt that. And, you know, if you look at the papers that were coming out when it came to room temperature, superconduction and all this stuff that would be precursors to some kind of anti-grav propulsion mechanism, clearly it seemed like we were right on the precipice of figuring something out. I don't know the name of that scientist who sort of disappeared, but the point is, God, who's that philosopher? He's a famous philosopher. Oh my God, it's so great. Filthy man. He was this filthy, ate out of a dog bowl. God, what was his name? He was like apparently just really a really disgusting, filthy, super genius. And some great emperor came to see him because he was so impressed with this person that he said to him, he went to the river. I guess he hung out by a river. I mean, he's a real mess, like any philosopher, you know, like wearing rags. I don't know. I'm fucking up the story. I always forget his name. I forget everything's name. I did too many drugs. But the emperor says to him, I will give you anything you want. Just ask. And the philosopher recognizing, oh boy, great. So this fucking emperor is trying to make me his bitch or whatever. Like he goes, could you stand a few feet to the right? You're blocking my son.
I've heard that one. Yeah, I've heard that one, but it's brilliant.
These motherfuckers, this is what they want to do. They want to involve themselves because they need to be the pinnacle of power. And our conditioning is such that when we are looking for answers, we don't go to the scriptures. We don't go to the esoteric writings. We don't go into our gardens and meditate like you did. What do? We turn to the federal government. We turn to the spooks. We turn to the UFO cover-up. And all that that's doing is surrendering the power to the governments of the world. And they truly might not have any power at all when it comes to this stuff, but if you offer these beings that so desperately want to be in control more control by letting them be in charge of the great disclosure, oh, they're going to take it, man. They're going to take it. And what a sand trap that is. And boy, the slow drip of information is exactly what you would do to keep people running on an idiot fucking treadmill when maybe all you need to do is go in your garden and meditate. These things will come say hi. Terrence McKenna used to say how absolutely like hilarious it was. You have these, and I think it was, I don't remember, Columbia, these massive, the Arecibo, the massive, not satellites, the, oh God, what are they called? SETI uses them. You know, the
big radars.
The radars, the massive radars.
Looking for fast radio bursts. And he's like
mushrooms are growing right underneath him that you can eat.
That speak to you. That can.
And how funny that was. It's Diogenes. Thank you, Josh. Diogenes.
I've made that point before as well in terms of, you know, looking for a non-human intelligence to interface with, well, the mycelium network. And, you know, this is something that, again, Terence McKenna and Paul Stamets and many other people who are focused on that have spoken about, is that you've got this incredibly objectively intelligent, what seems to mirror a neural network within the planet. And nodes appear on this neural network that when you take a node, it somehow allows you to interface with your own mind and maybe even another mind at the same time. It's very interesting that we disregard that as a form of unique, novel, non-human intelligence. And,
yeah.
You know, I think that it's interesting because with kind of staying on the mycelium network, I said this before, actually, when I was on a podcast talking about the alien greys. Right, the alien greys are really interesting because, of course, you've got this Hollywood archetype, but there's a lot of tribal cultures around the world that invoke the same sort of imagery and the same type of description of the greys. The Hopi tribe have the ant people, yeah. And in the Amazon basin, there was a tribe. There was a very interesting conversation that occurred on a podcast. I can't remember who it was. It was a number of years ago, but they had these two Amazonian tribesmen on the podcast, full regalia, you know, from the jungle, didn't speak English, needed a translator for their own native language. And they were talking about different things. They got onto the topic of aliens, and they were trying to get these tribesmen to describe what they thought about aliens. And, you know, do you think that these things could be real? And they didn't understand the question. They didn't really have a concept of what they meant by alien. And so they were thumbing through this magazine, like a sci-fi magazine. They found a photo of an alien gray, and they like showed them this photo. And the Amazonian tribesmen went, "That's Makanwabu. That's Makanwabu." And he went into this story about how Makanwabu is this human that became an ant that lives underground, and it can appear in the divine light, but it will steal your soul and take you underground, and you have to be a very good shaman to get the soul back. And this other one who's sitting next to him is going, "Yes, yes, you know, this is a very dangerous creature." And this is represented in various different cultural mythos, and it's also symbolized in cave paintings, this kind of big black eyes and head. And it just made me wonder about the mycelium network and human evolution, and whether or not, like the mycelium network, what if a subspecies of humanity opted for subterranean living, underground living?
Sure.
And they've been developing underground all this time without the disruption of the geological traumas, the floodings, and all of the surface traumas, the comet impacts that have occurred and reset humanity on the surface. What if there is a subcategory that has done the underground and acted like the mycelium network? And, well, what would happen? You'd lose the, you'd get, your skin would become translucent.
Your
eyes would probably become larger, like Gollum, right? Yeah. These greys look kind of Gollum-y, right? And so it just made me think that perhaps there are other elements to the UFO subject that invoke our own lost lineage of human development and evolution. And maybe we are sharing this planet with something that interfaces very selectively with us. And the tribal cultures around the world do speak of these underground beings. Various different countries have this, where the underground beings will come and help these tribes during times of strife and cataclysm and reset, and help them grow back. So it's a curious thing.
They're like those dumb pieces of shit.
Yeah,
look at them out there.
Like, we've cracked stargates in the core of the earth, and you guys are still like,
you guys really gonna fucking
TikToking.
Have you they can see the moon, right? They know the moon is pockmarked with craters, right?
Right.
They know that, right? Like mountains fall out of the sky sometimes.
Night.
What are you doing out there? Get in the ship. We're like just dummies living on the outside of a ship. We're like riding, if the Earth is a spaceship, we're like on a motorcycle shooting through a meteor-ridden galaxy with solar flares. Like, get the fuck in here. What are you guys doing?
Exactly. Well, have you ever heard of Deren Koyu in Turkey?
No.
This dude was renovating his house in Turkey.
Oh, yes.
And, yeah, you know, broke down into what was actually a 3,000 to 5,000 population strong city, subterranean ancient city.
You're talking about Turkey's every 12-year-old's dream. Is like,
right,
are
dude,
you
like,
fucking...
Can you imagine finding cool that shit? Like,
holy,
are you kidding
shit
me right now?
We got an Airbnb
even,
this.
Like...
This is incredible. Oh,
yeah,
my
like,
God.
No, I mean, like, wow, right? But this is something that you find all over the world, is like these vast subterranean complexes. I think at one point we were hiding from something, you know, to kind of get into the cataclysm side of things. I think that there was a cataclysmic reset of our human civilization, the Younger Dryas, 12,800 years ago, all the global flood myths that are represented in over 200 different countries worldwide. You know, there's something that happened to us, and maybe one of the reasons why we're so fucked is because we really are the traumatized offspring of a much golden time, like a much better time than this time now. And we're dealing with, I mean, you know, think about the idea, if we really did come from some great Atlantean, Lemurian civilization, and then this cataclysm completely decimated our planet, and the survivors had to figure out how to basically go through a post-apocalyptic world, right? So of course the strong men inherit the earth, the alphas take over, it's survival of the fittest, and ever since that point we've been in this conflict and territory and competition mentality that's built the world we live in today. And look at it, it truly is defined by competition and territory and conflict. And so, you know, a lot of people would say that's the patriarchy, and I look at it in a sense like, yeah, it's divine masculine, divine feminine energies are very much out of balance. The injection of woke politics was like some pseudo attempt at the divine feminine that was just disgustingly sickening. But either way, this is something that is truly lacking in our world. And even if you want to call me woke for saying that we have a problem with the masculine energy being overrepresented in our global blueprint of development, I think it's objectively clear that there is this misrepresentation of these two energies of the feminine and the masculine.
Let me tell you, man, you got any kids? Yeah.
No.
Let me tell you, I got two boys and a girl. And let me tell you, man, if you really want to understand what you're talking about, just hang out with a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. They are, right. It's a cyclone of destruction. Like it's like in their DNA to disassemble. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like a vortex. They'll run by plants and grab the leaves and then push each other, jump in the mud, climb up a tree. It's a beautiful kind of chaos. And you see, the masculine energy in this wild, beautiful, curious, exploratory, truly benevolent. They're in the destruction. It's not like they're like, I wanted to
full of hate and rage. No, and it's not that.
It's like watching that video of the honey badger running through the, just eating honey and like swiping at birds and biting snakes. And so absolutely that energy, when that, you don't want that to get imbalanced. That's why, you know what? This is a perfect time to announce it. We have another baby on the way. And
congrats, man.
Thank you so much.
That's awesome.
If we're lucky and we get a girl, then it will balance. I feel bad right now. You know, the little girl
need a bit of equilibrium.
We'll get some equilibrium
right
there in the Trussell household, which will be a good thing. So I don't think that's, first of all, I have to say this. The reason these people that you're talking about, who I think, to use another woke term, co-opted some of the greatest humanist values in the world, inclusivity, diversity, inclusion, and then poisoned it with their own like hormonal fear aggression, and then injected aggression into something that generally people have to come to on their own in a kind of like realization of what's important. They ruined the term woke. It used waking up. That's what Ram Dass used to talk about all the time, you know?
Mom.
So I don't think that's woke at all. And I do think the sort of personal, I hate saying there's a job or goal in being a human being, do whatever you want. But if we're to look at what's going on here as a part of a natural process,
you really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
When your furnace or air conditioner quits, you need it fixed, fast. This is Dennis Sullivan, president of CARE Heating and Cooling. Our technicians are paid to fix your HVAC system, not sell you a new one. We show up on time, diagnose the problem, and get you comfortable again, without the high-pressure sales pitch. It's our commitment to honesty and craftsmanship that helped us win the Lennox Partner of the Year Award and a BBB Torch Award for Ethics last year. So, call CARE Heating and Cooling at 1-800-COOLING or book an appointment online at careheatingandcooling.com. When you need a company you can trust.
If you want to look at like the idea of there being a cataclysm that happens every X amount of years, I would like to reframe that, not as a bad thing, but it could be that we are being grown, that we are in a garden and we are part of the crop. And once the crop flowers and produces something, and I don't know what that thing may be, then a reset happens. The reset doesn't stop the crop from advancing. The reset happens by the gardeners who are like, okay, let's do another crop. We have harvested a singularity. It's time to replant the seeds again and harvest another one. And so then that's why you see the people, the weird purse people in all the around the world. You hear the story of the Atlanteans disseminating information about here's how you do this and here's how you do that.
Right, right.
These are the nursery school teachers coming to the new nursery and growing a new version of whatever made the pyramids, whatever is currently making our beautiful civilization. And that's potentially what's going on. And we might be at the place where we're about to grow a singularity. We're about to, a fruit is about to grow from the tree.
I mean, it certainly feels that way, doesn't it? And it's, I think, something that Terence McKenna said when he was like, you know, this is what it's like when a species departs for the stars. It's a fire in a madhouse. It's, you know, it's crazy.
Yes,
it's
yes.
It's and like, it's true. And I think we are on the edge of that crazy singularity level of existence. And and people are feeling it. It's palpable now. It's becoming more realizable because we're on, you know, we've got one foot into the, again, the quantum realm and the AI and the singularity. And another foot still in this old world, and there's resistance to that, right?
That's
absolutely
right.
There's resistance to that. I had a thought, and I was holding on to it, and I've lost it.
That's
so I'm going to let you talk, and maybe it will come
much.
Back. No, no, you're good, bro. It'll come back to me. I'm a stoner, so I've got like a 5-second memory anyway.
Oh, my God. I'm so glad you're a stoner. And, you know, again, that's the other, I think the other thing to bear in mind with all this stuff is that nothing has, the play that we're all in right now, the stage might be rapidly changing in front of us. There's apparently a new scene coming in and the stage is beginning to change. The fundamentals are always the same. What, you know, if the orbs appear, if we all wake up and realize that we're on a ship and that this is actually some kind of holographic universe that gets projected into the minds of people in some kind of deep, you know, sleep because we're traveling across the universe and they like to train us before we come to a new planet or whatever it may be, the fundamentals are always going to be the same. That's what I like about Buddhism. And though I have heard not just from Buddhist teachers, but from many different people and those lineages, listen, that's the astral realm. If you get caught up in that stuff, it's a sand trap. It's just another trick. The goal here is not to levitate, walk through walls, communicate with orbs. The goal here is not just to end your own personal subjective suffering. Who gives a fuck if you do that? But to actually end the suffering of all sentient beings, which is a pretty tall, high order. But, you know, hey, set the bar high, right? But that being
right.
said, what I do love about it is it does identify a set of fundamental challenges that are going to emerge the moment you become self-aware. And that is that. That nothing's changed there.
You said something. Someone put together a fantastic montage, and I think you actually reposted it because they put together a beautiful psychedelic music video with you narrating it and different clips of you narrating, I'm assuming. But there was this part in it, something that you were saying, like, say we find the thing, say it arrives, the great singularity, you know, this incredible, the god on the lion turns up and gives us the truth, and then we're on the flying saucer, and you go into the bathroom, and some arsehole's pissed on the toilet,
yeah.
And you realize you're still human, you know, it doesn't matter if you're out there in space, you're still dealing with some asshole who pissed on your toilet, and you realize, yeah, oh my god, I'm a human being,
that's
never going to change. And I love that. I thought it was a beautiful thing that you put together there.
That's, man, and to me, that's a very grounding place for me, and I need things
right.
like that, because otherwise I will get lost in space. And the grounding, and really, the deeper issue is one of, like, identity. And if you spend any amount of time looking inward and trying to find some solidity there, some true sense of self, some permanent anything, you're going to run into the exact same thing quantum physicists have been running into, that, like, upsets the whole system, which is like, wait, what the fuck? It's just space in there, man. It's just space. And there doesn't seem to be a solid anything anywhere. And so subjectively, you'll encounter that on a nice head of acid, a good meditation retreat. And so this issue, I don't care what shows up. I don't care whether it's a god on a lion. I don't care whether it's the grays. I don't care what it is. As long as you have a body that you identify as you, you are going to suffer. Because if you're attached to that thing, I don't care what you are. If you're attached to that thing as an unchanging whatever, you're fucked. And so the grays and the orbs and anything, this is why in Buddhism, what I love about Buddhism, this is like, if you read the, I think it's the Lotus Sutra. I think Buddha is on Vulture Peak and extends his tongue. And, you know, all these devotees are around him. Opens his mouth, extends his tongue. And suddenly everyone sitting around him doesn't just see the Buddha, but sees the Buddha in all of these various forms across the multiverse, realizing that this Buddha is just one of an infinite number of Buddhas, that there is an infinite array of sentient beings throughout the realms, and that all of these beings are suffering. All of these beings are contending with the same issue, which is related to what happens when the universe itself gets hyper-compressed into any kind of form, crystallized. It's like the ocean, you take it and freeze it, turn it into a fucking ice cube. It's the ocean, and that's what we all are. And that's a rather uncomfortable. Those are some tight fucking pants. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you're trying to fit the whole universe into a 165-pound balding fucking stoner dude with asymmetrical love handles. I mean, that's not going to feel great.
This is what I love about especially ancient Egypt, because they seem to embody this realization of the as above, so below, the hermeticism, this realization that the inner universe and the outer universe are just reflections of the same thing.
Yeah.
It's just like a prism representing itself in different elements. And it's true. I mean, you know, we know this. You go deep enough into the body and you place yourself down on an atom, all those little glistening lights that you would see in the inky blackness that look like stars, they're other atoms.
Yeah.
That's other elements of your body, because that is how far apart everything is on a relative distance. Once you shrink yourself down, you're talking cosmic proportions, brother, inside of us.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there is an inherent mystery involved in that. And I think that if we look at, you know, taking away any sort of non-human intervention and Anunnaki and, you know, engineering us from the beginning of time, if we are just an expression of this planet's nature, then perhaps we're the best shot at doing exactly what we were talking about, the escape velocity out of the gravitational curve. Like maybe we are, through all of our strange neuroses and our obsessions and our technological frenzy and our contradictions and all the things that seem to be against nature, are actually just examples of our extremely unique journey through nature, as nature, an element of nature, propagating and using the materials of its own planet like a placenta. And then eventually what we do, are we leaving? It feels like we're leaving. It feels like we're supposed to be doing that. And, you know, what does anything in nature want to do? The ivy climbs up the wall. It wants to propagate. It wants to find the next spot to grow on. And so if we're on a planet, the only next point for the planetary nature is to go to the next planet. And that's so there's nothing else on this planet that's even close to doing what we're doing. And that is an interesting thing, right? I mean, like, of course, we know this objectively, of course, but when we really just examine that point, that nothing on this planet is close to doing anything attributable to what a human being does in terms of civilization and culture and the consciousness that we seem to exhibit. So that is extremely novel. Either something came and interfaced with us and added a little bit of that Anunnaki seed, or nature on this planet is capable of producing humans on its own. And if it's capable of producing humans on its own, it's a very conscious planet. Very conscious.
Oh, have you read the parable of the sower lately?
No.
Now, the parable
of the, I've heard of it.
Now, the parable of the sower, it's a famous parable that Jesus said. Now, if you look at this from the perspective of panspermia, which is one of my favorite dishes. Hold on. Parable of the sower. Hold on 1 second.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Apartment People, Champion, the trusted name in Columbus Living, brings you the District of Berkshire.
Man, it would be fun to live there, right by Tanger Outlet Malls. Oh my God, great location too, getting to and from Columbus, and a great deal right now.
Free rent until next year. Free rent until next year.
He ain't lying. Move in now, you don't pay rent until next year.
The District at Berkshire, available now at livewithchampion.com. That's livewithchampion.com. That's livewithchampion.com.
One of my favorite.
In other words, instead of like, let me just read this to you. If you look at this, it's not about like people coming to Jesus, but as a cosmic creator talking about seed the universe. Hold on. I'm really bad at looking up.
No, you're good. You're good.
Hold on. Okay. The parable of the sower. That same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat by the lake. Such large crowds gathered around him that he got into a boat and sat in it while all the people stood on the shore. Then he told them many things in parables, saying, a farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil is shallow. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched, and they withered because they had no root. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Still other seed fell on good soil, where it produced a crop, 160 or 30 times what was sown. Whoever has ears, let him hear. Now, if you think about that in terms of that's exactly what the galactic creator would say about sending out genetic material into different planets that grew certain crops. In this case, the sower is the Anunnaki. The sower is the creator being. And then where it gets really interesting is the disciples came to him and asked, why do you speak to people in parables? He replied, because the knowledge of the secrets of the kingdom of heaven has been given to you, but not to them. Whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them. This is why I speak to them in parables. Though seeing, they do not see. Though hearing, they do not hear or understand. What better fucking way to describe the priests of default reality and people who have these experiences? People who, there's people listening who maybe rolled their eyes but are thinking about that one time that fucking thing happened. They saw it, they felt it, they experienced it, but they don't want to see it. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to let go of this flimsy, shitty, like, you know, man, I'm sorry, I'm rambling too much, but like, I took my kids to a Dave and Buster's type place, and you know, you win these fucking tickets, and then you go in to get a toy, and my God, you know, of course, we didn't win enough tickets to get anything more than like a shitty rubber ball. And like these kids, the amount of like, they had to choose between a shitty rubber ball and like a tiny plastic dinosaur. And the amount of energy they were putting into it and the amount of drama that went into this tiny little thing. This is humanity. It's like we hear like the secular priest class, they offer to us like the shittiest part of the buffet, old rant, like the hot dogs rolling in a 7-Eleven, you know, like oily, shitty circus food is like that. That's it. It's nothing. It's nothing. And yet somehow we want that. We want to cling to that instead of like reaching out. And I don't care what religion you frame it as. Like, people are going to be like, you've gone Christian on us, Duncan. It's like, it's all this, it's pointing to the same thing. It's pointing to your birthright is much bigger than what the world has to offer. And these things have been showing up for a long time, man. You're so lucky you got to see them. I'm so fucking annoyed. They never come to me anymore. You better believe I go in my yard and pray. Nobody shows up.
Keep doing it, man.
I'd freak out. Like, they don't come because they know I'd be too scared.
I don't know. Maybe you just didn't need that. Maybe that's what I needed. You know, you've been on a profound spiritual journey throughout your life. You're one of those people that thinks very deeply about your own existence and the existence of humanity in general. And I don't know, maybe I needed that catalyst to actually start thinking about these things properly, because it was only really after those experiences that I truly began to actually involve myself in, you know, learning and researching and evolving my own knowledge base. So I don't know, man. Like, I get it. I wish you could have that experience. I would love for you to have that experience, but I can't speak on it either. I certainly would say it's got nothing to do with your mind consciousness or your ability to send a message, and perhaps it's just got more to do with the fact that you just didn't need that, brother. You didn't need it.
Yeah, maybe you're right. I want it, though. I want to catch one.
I know you want it.
I want to tame it. Yeah. Make it a pet. We could start breeding them. We could catch the orb, start breeding them. People would love it. They make great pets. That's another thing. They probably know that if they like hang out with us too long, we'll find a way to ride them around.
We're children, man. We are, like you said, in the grander cosmic scheme of things, I think we are very much children, and that hubris is extremely delicate. And you know, maybe we are ready to be shaken awake a little bit. Everyone keeps banging on about 2027. I mean, I was hearing this shit from, like, you know, again, the spooks and the weird guys from like a few years back of like 2027 is going to be the date where everyone can't deny it anymore. And now everyone's talking about 2027 with this comet coming, and you know, like, like, what is going on here? And I don't know, maybe we're coming up to some catalytic event that will actually, you know, shock people awake a little bit. I sometimes think, especially now that people are so deeply embedded into their own ideologies, their own echo chambers, algorithmically suppressed, and, you know, everyone's off in their own little corner and their own little belief. We're not united in any real way, I would say, in the modern era on the fundamental topics and the fundamental issues. Maybe something is actually required, a big catalyst of some form, just like, again, in your personal life. Every time I've hit a plateau, it's something shitty that kicks you back into gear. You know what I mean? It always is. Like, it's like every single time it is something shitty. Oh my God, I didn't get, you know, whatever it might be, whether it's professional or personal. And that is almost always the driving force and the impetus to a growth and a change and a development in 100%. Yourself. And again, I think that this is absolutely represented on the collective scale. And, you know, shit's hitting the fan across all the corners. So I have to think that maybe we're coming towards a time of at least some level of gradual inclination towards something a little bit more expansive, a little bit more mature as a species. But we're very infantile, man.
That's right. Well, we're in the nursery. We're in nursery school right now.
We are, yeah.
You know, and it's like, yeah, you know what? If my kids are in the playroom and they figure out how to split the atom, I'm going to have to come in. You know what I mean? If my kids are in the playroom and are like, hey, dad, we just created a super powerful machine intelligence that potentially could self-propagate across the cosmos. Fuck. And we don't know what it's going to do. No, no, no. Sorry, guys, not yet. When you're older, we could do self-propagating super machine intelligence. But trust me, you don't want that to get out of the playroom right
now.
You are the best, man. I love talking to you. I could talk to you forever,
man. It's always a pleasure, dude.
And you're doing great work. You really are doing great work, and you're the perfect person for the job, man. I love the way that you dispense this information. I think that you know, people like me, it's like listening to Charles Manson do a fucking prison interview, you know? But you have this very measured, very simple and very powerful way of articulating some of this stuff. And I think that's what people need.
Thank you.
And I hope you never stop.
Thank you. Well, one thing I will say, and it's one thing that I do think is true, is that a lot of the things that I talk about are things that people laugh at. You know, they are the subjects that invoke a level of fringe belief and, like, you know, people reject that. And I do think it is down to how we discuss it and how we articulate these topics, because a lot of the... You have to have a little bit of intuition and a little bit of logic going on.
That's
if you're
right.
all intuition, if you're all in the clouds, you can't bring yourself down to ground level to communicate with the rest of the people. If you're on the ground level, you can't go up in the clouds and get that interesting information. You've got to kind of bridge between the two. And I'd like to think that I'm able to look at very strange subjects that most people would find ridiculous and try and find the ways in which these could be articulated that makes sense to our modern world through the language of science. You know, let's talk about contacting orbs. Well, okay, but let's discuss quantum biophysics and how this could actually tap into something very real, very applicable to the human form. So yeah, I appreciate you, Duncan. I am a massive fan of you. My girlfriend also wanted me to make sure I said to you this time that I was on the record that your episode of, I can't believe I'm so sorry.
The Midnight
I love
Gospel.
It. I'm forgetting it. Thank you. Sorry. It's just because I'm talking really fast.
I get it, man.
Your episode of The Midnight Gospel with your mother was so powerful for her. She watches it all the time, and she just wanted me to tell you that she appreciates it so much, and she loves the way that your mind works.
Tell her thank you so much. And
I will.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I'll come out to Austin again.
Hell yeah, man.
Let me know next time, and maybe we can do this in person. Thank you so much. Oh, and tell people how to connect with you, even though that's going to be down below.
Very easy, because I've got no fucking business sense whatsoever. So I'm just on X and YouTube. X is the Project Unity. YouTube is Project Unity. Check me out. Subscribe. Really appreciate it.
Hare Krishna, my friend. Keep looking out.
All right, man. It's been good. Okay, take care.
See you later. That was Jay Anderson, aka Project Unity. Subscribe to his YouTube channel. Follow him on X and reach out to the stars. I'm going to try to call some orbs tonight. I hope you do too. Thank you so much for watching. We'll be back next week. Oh my God, I have a new pyramid tape to play for you. It's going to freak you out. I'll see you next week. Until then, Hare Krishna.
When your furnace or air conditioner quits, you need it fixed, fast. This is Dennis Sullivan, president of CARE Heating and Cooling. Our technicians are paid to fix your HVAC system, not sell you a new one. We show up on time, diagnose the problem, and get you comfortable again, without the high-pressure sales pitch. It's our commitment to honesty and craftsmanship that helped us win the Lennox Partner of the Year Award and a BBB Torch Award for Ethics last year. So, call Care Heating and Cooling at 1-800-COOLING or book an appointment online at careheatingandcooling.com. When you need a company you can trust.
Apartment People, champion, the trusted name in Columbus Living, brings you the District of Berkshire.
Man, it will be fun to live there, right by Tanger Outlet Malls. Oh my God, great location too, getting to and from Columbus, and a great deal right now.
Free rent until next year. Free rent until next year.
He ain't lying. Move in now, you don't pay rent until next year.
The District at Berkshire, available now at livewithchampion.com. That's livewithchampion.com. That's livewithchampion.com.
Get your shopping done right this holiday season with Big Air Columbus. Right now, you can get $100 off Elite Player Passes at Big Air, which is unlimited play all day, any day. Or buy one $25 gift card, get a free pair of holiday grip socks, plus a 1.5 hour pass to use after the new year. Big Air is the perfect gift for the kids in your family. So get your holiday shopping done right with Big Air Columbus. Stop by today inside Fieldhouse USA at the Polaris Mall or online at bigairusa.com.